Hi, this is Maria Olson. You may know me from Trophy Heads or Starry Eyes and maybe Paranormal Activity 3. And I want to welcome you to Anthony T's Horror Show because it's an awesome show.
Hi, my name is Jessica Cameron, and you're listening to Anthony T's Horror Show.
Hey, fellow horror fans. This is Troy Escamilla, the director of Party Night and Mrs. Claus, and you are listening to Anthony T's Horror Show. Enjoy.
Welcome to another edition of Anthony T's Horror Show. I'm Anthony T. Now, this edition will be a special edition as this will contain the indie film panel that took place on June 8th, 2019 at ScareCon New England in Framingham, Massachusetts. It's a panel that I co-moderated along with Doc Discussion's own Michael Darwin. And the guests on the panel are Damian Leone from Terrifier, Garo Nagosian from Dangerous People, and Matthew Fisher from Insomniac, and DJ Stan the Man. I hope you enjoy this panel, and after this panel, I will have my film recommendation for this episode.
Damian from Terrifier, and Garo from Dangerous People, and Actress Apocalypse.
Yep.
Okay, and
Matthew Fisher from DJ Stan the Man and Insomniac.
And Anthony Thurber from Anthony T's Horror Show.
And I'm Mike from the Dark Discussions Podcast. Does everybody here have a table that people can come visit?
Yep. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So please come visit us upstairs if you have further questions or anything else. Oh, everybody can visit the same door over there. So I think Anthony's got a list of questions.
Yes, I do.
I love it when people are prepared.
Now, my first question is, what drove each of you to bypass the Hollywood system and say, I want to pick up a camera and make your own movie the way that you want to?
Stop
Who's
me.
Going first?
I mean, it kind of just naturally happened that way for me. Because no one comes knocking on your door, so you just got to start making your own things. So especially I got into filmmaking through special makeup effects because Tom Savini was the one who, showed me what goes on behind the curtain. You know, when I saw Scream Greats and I saw how monsters were made, that just blew my mind. So it all started there with me just doing makeup effects and practicing on my friends and then making little home movies. And eventually it's like, you know, comes time if you want to take filmmaking seriously, right? You have to make your first short film and it has to be your calling card to start showing people. And because I did the special effects, you know, I decided to pack it out with as many effects as I could because I figured that would make it stand out amongst, you know, the thousands of other short films. And that was actually the first time I created Art the Clown. It's just been going since there. So that was just one of the things I always knew, especially since we don't have big budgets and we're, no matter what, you're going up against Hollywood movies. So you got to put things in your film that maybe Hollywood's afraid to do, like the hacksaw scene in Terrifier, you know? So, yeah. So.
Come on in, find a seat. I think it's yeah. Somebody wants to be in your
Wisteria. Hey.
You talk
me into your pressure and all. Yeah, As for me, I know that Hollywood would have told me to go fuck off, so I just decided to go and make my own stuff. It's just easier. And, you know, you have – everything's easier now to make movies because, DSLRs can do fantastic imagery. If you got a good director of photography, they can really pull the best possible image out for you. So it's just getting talented people, and you don't really have to spend a huge amount of money, and you can make a decent looking film. So you don't really need Hollywood, except for they can get your product out to a bigger audience than you can. And that's the only reason you would ever need them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with what they said for the most part a lot. I was a big fan of like Troma. That does a lot of like independent low budget films, and for people who've seen them, you know, it doesn't take a lot of money. You know, they just go out there and kind of have fun, and you take that attitude and gather up some friends and family on a weekend and go shoot something and see how it turns out and try and make it better next time.
When you say shoot something, you're talking about a movie.
Yeah, shoot a movie. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what is the best way to get into filmmaking if you've never picked up a camera in your life?
Pick up a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I did it. I mean, I never went to film school. Like, when I got out of high school, I took one filmmaking class. I thought I wanted to go to high school. So I took an introductory aesthetics of directing class at the New School in Manhattan. And, the things I was being taught, I would have enjoyed it more now, but I think I was a little too immature. But, you know, they're showing films like, you know, Godard and Truffaut and movies that I did not grow up, that did not want to make me make movies, you know. And I was just like, well, this is not what I'm interested in. And so I just went out on my own after that. I dropped out and I just started making movies. So I didn't have any technical training. I was just mimicking what I saw in movies that I loved and teaching myself with a camcorder, like how to make that cut. Like, this was before I even had editing software, so I taught myself how to in-camera edit, so I would have to rewind and stop it exactly where I wanted the next, you know, shot to pick up and everything like that. So that's how I taught myself how to edit, and I had to unteach myself how to do that, actually, when I learned how to really edit. That was actually very tricky. But yeah, I mean, you just really have to do it, and especially now, everything is cheaper, everything's more accessible, you can edit on, do everything on the computer yourself. I mean, I taught myself how to do visual effects on YouTube when I was editing Terrifier. I needed some subtle visual effects, and there's just tutorials for everything. So,
are there a lot of like how to edit, how to light, how to do sound? Do you find all that on YouTube?
Oh, everything is there. But I can't recommend just watching movies enough. Like, that is the ultimate film school. You have to live and breathe movies.
I know a filmmaker who learned a lot. He's been making films since he was a teenager, in his 30s now, but he got a lot from just doing looking at the behind the scenes and the commentary tracks of the DVDs, and get all these ideas and insights from those people. So that seems. Oh, I mean, yeah. Were there any films that you guys looked at that maybe were instructional for you, or that are inspirational for you?
You know what I watch a lot, honestly. I still do to this day. The HBO Project Greenlights. Did you ever see those?
Yeah.
Like, all right, it's a very in depth.
That's where the Feast came from.
Yeah. That was season 3, and I constantly watch those when I'm working. I just keep them on in the background, and just like, they show the whole process. I mean, that was later in my life, but it's like just always like when I go through all the stages of making a movie, when it's time to write the script, then I just immerse myself in everything screenwriting. So I'll just constantly be listening to other screenwriters on YouTube. Like, that's all I focus on, and you know, and then when I start doing the effects, I'll just live and breathe special effects. That's it. I'll just watch all effects videos and stuff. So
For me, it was, you know, you always like would listen to commentary tracks and stuff like that. But for me, the thing that really helped me is I made a movie before Dangerous People that I completely did not release because it was garbage. And I learned how I didn't want to make a movie by making that movie. And I think sometimes you just got to go out there and you got to fail spectacularly.
Yes.
And you learn your best lessons from your failures. And, after I'd made that movie and I realized it was garbage, I was kind of like, oh, I'm pissed off. Why did I waste all that time? Stuff like that. But then what happened was, you know, while I'm making Dangerous People, I'm like, oh, okay. And I took everything I learned from that and was able to, like, it was much smoother, and I was able to do what I wanted to do. So, even if you watch commentary tracks, even if you read books and all that, it really takes actually going out there doing it and failing to really show you what you need to do. So you have to, if you go out and you go and you try to make a movie for your first time, you're going to, it's probably 9 times out of 10, it's going to suck. You're going to make the shittiest movie possible and you're going to hate it, but you're going to take everything you learned from that and make a better movie next time. And that's the best advice I can give you.
Mm-hmm. Every city has their own film community. So if you want to get out there, just, you know, social media, find out who's in your community making films and contact them. I'm sure they'd let you help out on set and just work your way up, learning all the ropes.
Should a filmmaker make a feature film first, or should they make a bunch of short films first?
Short films, I would say, 100%. Because, like he just said, you're gonna fail, and you're gonna, you know, you don't want to. It's really hard to make a movie, and it's very overwhelming. So definitely start small. Everything should be gradual.
Yeah,
I never made a short film. I that's why I fucked up and made the feature that was never released.
I'm curious, how many people here want to be filmmakers? Anyone? Two, three. Okay, just curious. Does anyone in the audience have a question? If you have a question, just raise your hands, because I know Anthony's prepared, so he can cover this whole thing.
So aside from a cell phone, like, what camera would you advise picking up and just getting out and shooting footage?
It's like DSLR cameras. Yeah, you can get them in Best Buy and for a few grand, a good one.
Or, I mean, honestly, you could go on Craigslist and probably get one for about a grand. As long as it's in good condition, and you, as long as you get some decent lenses to go with it, you can, and you know how to use the camera, you can, you know, get a decent to great image out of it.
But wasn't it Blair Witch where they actually just bought the camera at Best Buy with a credit card and then returned it when they were done with the film?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
Quite an idea.
That's funny.
I know there was a movie they did, and I was thinking it might be Blair Witch, but it was something like that where they filmed it really quickly, and then they were like, oh, no, we don't need it anymore. And then just repackaged it and put it back.
Something on...
From whatever store it was, but right. So, yeah, they just put it on their card, bought it, used it, kept it in good condition.
I'm sure you guys are aware that something a lot of filmmakers take for granted for, like, a... new filmmakers is sound, even more than the visuals, because if your sound is very amateur, I mean, it destroys your entire production. And so
there
film
Found, have you seen that?
That movie's awesome. Yeah,
and it's got a ballad fan, but like, that's one of the first things I noticed is like, I could tell right away it's an indie film because it looks good. But it sounds like a tin can.
So
and that's half of it, your audio and your visual, you know what I mean? You need them both pretty solid.
Speaking of this, why is it important to make your film look professional?
So people will take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Casting is also another key element needed for a film to succeed. What should a first-time filmmaker do when looking for actors?
Free food?
Well, I believe in that, like when they say directing is 90% of casting or whatever, because I don't like to – like I like to find the person I know is going to be – awesome in the part, and then just let them go. I don't like to be like too hands-on and like give them too much direction. Like the least I have to do, the better for when it comes to working with the actors, I feel.
Yeah. The more collaborative you are with the actor, the more in it they feel, and they're more like happy with their performance.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing you can do is when you got an actor, like my lead actor on Dangerous People, I said to him, I explained to him what I wanted for the character. I explained to him the tone of what the movie was and all that. And then basically when you get to set, he brought everything I needed because I just told him what I wanted. And because he's a professional actor, he's able to do what I need him to do. And he did it great.
I think people need to remember that there's whatever community you're in, there's a community theater. And some of those people are terrible, but there's often someone who's really good there who just does it as a lark, you know, or does it in their spare time when they're not working in the hardware store or whatever it is. And, you know, you need people who have flexible schedules because you'll be filming, you know, your 2-hour movie over, like, what was Evil Dead? Like, took them 2 years to film,
exactly.
You know, picking it up on weekends and where they can. You know, it's just find somebody with some talent who isn't going to freeze up on camera, who can memorize some lines. And I was Don Coscarelli supposedly, you know, he said he doesn't need professional actors. He just needs good characters. Mm-hmm. You know, you find someone who's an interesting character and write a part for them. Like, ooh, that would be an interesting person to put in my movie.
Yeah.
Like Garrow, you found yourself.
Yeah, I tend to put myself in the movies basically because I'm also producing the movies. And, you know, anytime you do independent movies, people will not show up. Like, you'll be like, okay, we got here. Where's our actor? Oh, they didn't show up. Why not? Oh, something better came along. So you have this thing where you're always worrying about, are your actors going to show up? So if I take one of the lead roles, that's one less actor I have to worry about showing up. And I'm a halfway decent actor, so I don't stink up the place. So it makes the shoot smoother. So that's why I act in my own movies. And I haven't been told I'm terrible, so that's good.
But you did get your – well, I don't want to say it because I don't want to spoil the movie.
Okay.
Something not nice happens to him. Just saying. That wasn't real, right?
No.
Okay, so it's still – okay, good. Just checking.
I think you're talking about Vince. That happened to Vince.
Oh, it was Vince. That wasn't you. Okay,
it didn't happen to me. I don't – see, since I'm the writer too, I don't have to do the really terrible stuff that I make my other actors do.
What is the most common mistake a filmmaker can make?
Making a movie?
I'm not a filmmaker, but I've interviewed a lot. I would suggest the most common mistake a filmmaker would make is waiting for the stars to align, for everything to come just right, and just never making your movie because you're waiting for the perfect moment.
Or a lack of prep, I think. Yeah, jumping into it too quickly because then you find – I mean, you're going to run into –
So don't wait too long and don't go too quick.
Yeah, because you're going to run into problems no matter how prepared you are. It's inevitable on a movie set. You're always going to be throwing curveballs. It's a nightmare. So you really – like I like to plan everything out. Some people don't. Like they'll just be very spontaneous with the camera, setting up the shots. I love storyboards. I see the movie in my head before, so I – you know. But it doesn't mean you can't be flexible when you get to set and you might find a better shot or whatever. But I think you should always have a plan, especially to make your day. Just know we have X amount of shots to get through and everything.
Yeah, what I do is me and my DP, he gets there before everybody else does. And we talk about everything we're shooting that day. And what we do is we're like, okay, we want to shoot this like this, like this, like this. But we leave a little extra time to get kind of freaky and get shots that like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did this? Wouldn't it be cool if we did that? And a lot of those shots end up in the movie because we leave a little bit of a improvisational time to kind of do, you know, a little bit of craziness. But you want to make sure that you get what you need. And the one thing is when you first start out as a director, since you've never really done editing before, unless you've done editing, because once you start editing, you'll start to think like an editor when you start shooting. Because I noticed that we shot part of the movie first, and I hadn't started editing the movie. I never edited a movie before. But then, I started editing the movie, and then we had to go and shoot some other stuff. And then when we were shooting it, I'm noticing I'm directing totally different because I kind of know what I need now in editing, where you might shoot extra beforehand. Now you know exactly what you need. So I highly recommend that if you're going to end up directing, you should also kind of learn how to edit too, because it can actually – knowing how to edit can actually help when you're actually shooting.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, if you're a first-time filmmaker and you're writing the script as well, why is it important to tailor your script to the budget of the film?
Well, if you don't have the money, you won't be able to shoot what you're trying to pull off. I mean, you don't want to make Star Wars if you only have $10,000.
Right. So. Well, but then you can make Hardware Wars, and that made a ton of money.
Yeah, like I know for my movie takes place in the early 1970s, so I'm doing a period piece, and I was doing a period piece for less than $20,000. So that was kind of daunting, but we were able to pull it off. But, you know, I can understand how, you know, I wish I hadn't tried to do that because I ended up running out of money for post-production and I ended up having to do more stuff on it than I wanted to do post-production.
And you should write what you already have access to. So like me, I knew I was a makeup artist, so I can put tons of special effects into the movie that I didn't have to pay for because I don't have to pay myself. And like my mother worked at a hospital which had access to all these abandoned hospitals like around and on the facility that we shot all my movies in. So like, we didn't have to pay for those, and that's great production value. You know, we're in underground tunnels and all. It's amazing. So I knew I had that. So you tail the script to, you know, you write that into the script.
So like, Garrow, I know you had access to stuff because you were doing a period piece, mm-hmm. that you didn't have to pay for, not pay much for.
Yeah, we had people lend us classic cars for the movie. You know, and my friend knows the 70s really well. So, you know, he knew what clothes would be work. So a lot of thrift shops, eBay. And, you know, thankfully that didn't get too crazy, the costume budget. But, yeah, it's like, you know, you have people who will always help you and lend stuff because, hey, you're making a movie and it's good to be involved in something cool like that. Mm-hmm. So you can get people to help you and lend you stuff that will bring down the budget of the movie. So it's just good to, like, talk to different people because people can lead you to other people that you can – use to help you with your movie.
Now, funding is the key for any film to get made. What are some tips that you can offer to first-time filmmakers who feel nervous about going the crowdfunding route?
Ask everybody you know for money. That's the hardest part. There's no answer. There's no right. You could find the money in the weirdest places. You never know who's going to come through. It took me forever to find the money for Terrifier. And eventually we were going to just crowdfund it. And I sent it to a buddy of mine that I'd worked on. I did special effects on his movie. I didn't even ask him to put money in. I just said, can you share this Indiegogo campaign with on your Facebook with some of your friends? And he's like, how much are you looking for? And I told him the amount. And he was like, oh, I'll put it in. Like, and that was it. And it was years of ad. Even like the company who made All Hallows Eve, and they made a sequel, and it did well enough, and we weren't asking for a lot of money. And he's like, nah, he's like, clowns are never going to be big. You can't sell a movie on clowns. This is true. This is before It came out, but we knew It was coming out. And I'm like, really, dude? I'm like, they're making It, and Rob Zombie's making 31. I'm like, I really think, you know, Twisty, American Horror Story, that was coming out, so it was, everything's cyclical, and I'm like, really? I think it's coming around again. I think we got something. And he's like, no, never. And then It comes out, and it's the highest grossing movie of all, like horror movie of all time, and that's what you're dealing with out there, a bunch of idiots.
I would think, short of like Blair Witch, you know, or Paranormal Activity, which is for huge, that's about as successful as you can get is with Terrifier, right? Because the horror fans know it. You're doing professional photo ops now with Art the Clown. You know, I'm waiting for my elementary school kids to be coming like down the halls wearing, you know, next Halloween wearing Art the Clown.
That's cool.
When did you know like you had a thing with art? Or was it just kind of dumb luck?
Yesterday in the diner out here when the guy noticed. No, I'm kidding. But that did happen. Like, crazy things are starting to happen. Like, we were in a diner, and it was me and Dave's wearing a Terrifier shirt, and all of a sudden the waiter's like, oh, dude, is that a Terrifier shirt? He's like, I just saw that on Netflix, you know? And he's like, great movie. And then me and Dave look at each other and like, should we tell the guy?
And like, did you tell him?
Yeah, he comes back and Dave tells him. The guy flips out. And then like, you know, everybody's coming over us at the table, like the waiters, and then we're taking pictures with them before we leave. And like, so like, when things like that start happening, like people getting tattoos and Dave signing their legs and again his signature.
And like, hey, we hang waitress upside down. Did you take a picture?
Yeah. But honestly, like, so when I made the first short film with him, which is the first story in All Hallows Eve, like I've said this before, like Art the Clown is just a little character in it. He's like, he's just a supporting character. There's demons and all kinds of shit. Like, he just abducts this woman in the beginning and delivers her into the hands of a cult, and he's out of it. And then I would show it to people, and they were like, yeah, cool, very cool, cool monsters, cool creatures, but that clown was friggin' great, man. I wish he was in the whole thing. You should do something more with him. And that happened very early on, just with his design. So he wasn't even necessarily a slasher or anything at that point. Like, the only thing he does is inject it with a needle. Like, his personality was there, but that was it. So I'm like, all right, if we're going to take him into that realm, let's make him a really hardcore slasher. And he's
so
really,
so listen to feedback.
All the time. Constantly. I read everything, the good, the bad, and the ugly, man. Mm-hmm. Everything I could find. And a lot of things I agree with. You know, I either think you're trolling or I agree with it. So it's great to get feedback from fans. Yeah.
Now, what are some of the best locations to shoot your film if you have a shoestring budget?
Your house or woods? Woods is
right,
easy.
Right, the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. The woods is definitely, because it's very photogenic. And thankfully, when we were shooting, because we shot the movie in Florida, and, you know, it, they have very photogenic woods in Florida. The only problem is you'll be picking ticks off you after every shoot, and that sucks. But it, it looked good on camera, and I didn't get Lyme disease, so, you know, everything worked out.
Does anybody have a question in the audience? Oh, man in the jacket again.
Two parts. One, have you locked David for a lifetime contract?
Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, you might regret that in 40 years. Just saying.
What's your current recipe for
I don't make it. I buy it. So the, on Terrifier, we use this blood from a company called Dapper Cadaver, and they actually don't sell their blood anymore, and I love their blood. It looked very real. But now I'm going to use this UK blood that all the Hollywood guys use. It's called Robert Smith blood. It looks amazing. So.
Blood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we've all definitely Cairo's made blood in the past. Yeah.
Food coloring.
I had my effects artist do it. Yeah. You know, she actually has a really good blood recipe that's not made with Karo syrup. It's made with like an oil, and it's easy to wash out. And we're like, this is the best blood ever. It's like literally we'd spray it everywhere and not have to worry. It washes out very easily, and it looks great. So she actually had a really good blood recipe. So I didn't want to mess with it at all.
Well, it's funny. One of the greatest, I'm sure you guys know this, like blood recipes in Hollywood for the longest time was developed by Dick Smith, who did The Exorcist, Taxi Driver, right? And it was made with chemicals that you use to develop film. So you couldn't get it in your mouth. Like he had to make a separate blood. If like, and he actually invented the Cairo syrup recipe as well. But and that's a really great looking blood, the one with the chemical. But yeah.
Step one: have a sharp knife. Yeah.
As far as going back to the trying to get fun into your
Yeah, we had like the classic, what the hell do you call it, like the pitch packet or whatever, with all the, you know, we're going to put this actor in it, this is where we're going to shoot it, these are the effects and all this. So, I mean, it's just luck, honestly, getting money. We sent that to everybody for years, and I was just telling the story that then we were like, let's just go Indiegogo, let's do a, you know, crowdfunding campaign. And I sent it to a buddy of mine who's a fellow filmmaker. And I said, dude, can you just pass this around to people? We're trying to get the word out. And he's like, how much are you looking for? And I told him the budget. And he's like, I'll put it in. And like, that was it. He didn't look at anything. He had no idea what we were making. Like, so you never know.
How much does your personality affect the pitch? Right? I mean, how much is it just the materials you have versus how much is it you as a...
That's a good question. And I'm sure if you have the gift of gab and everything, and you have a great personality like a car salesman, it's amazing. Yeah. I don't at all. I can't sell myself. Like, I just have to, you know, you just have to see my work, and if you like it, that's all I got, really.
Should you make a pitch video if you want to get funding for your film as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do that next week. I mean, we're doing a little Indiegogo again, and we're going to make a video. Because people are visual. People want to see things, you know. It's really that simple.
Should you also try to make a trailer as well?
Sure. Yeah. People want to see as much. I mean, we're not going to have a trailer, but I mean, people want to see as much as possible. I mean, I'm sure you would love to see a little teaser to Terrifier too, right? But, yeah. Soon.
Question?
So going back to the sound thing, we've all seen horrible dubs before. So what would you say are some economical ways to produce your sound?
I mean, a lot of times, honestly, you just really have to pay for a good sound guy. And they're not cheap. I mean, there's really no other option.
Do you have a recommendation for a good sound system? Because I imagine they're all, some are better than others.
I'm sure. I actually don't know any of the technical aspect of sound, microphones, Ready? Things like that.
I stayed out of the sound person's way. You know, you just kind of let them do what they do and you do what you do. And then hopefully when you listen to it, it will be good. You know, and if it is, you're like, yay.
So but your budgeting, I mean, is that where you would want to put a decent amount of your money?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I have filmmaker friends who've made movies that cost like $250,000 and they just don't do any, you know, they hire horrible sound people and then they're in post production, they're out of money and they have to redo everything and dub the entire movie and do, you know, do ADR, and it sounds horrible. You could tell when it's ADR. It's very hard to get ADR right. I mean, that's when the actor has to come back in a studio and match their voice. And we actually did that in Terrifier. The entire pizzeria scene is dubbed, is ADR'd. Yeah, because we couldn't shut down the refrigerator. So the hum, the heavy hum is in the entire scene, like in the actual recorded.
That's funny. On Dangerous People, we were shooting in a bar, but I ended up having to reshoot the entire scene anyways because I had to recast my lead actor. But there was this huge, like, jumbo, like, walk-in refrigerator, yeah. And we're just listening to it, and it's like, and I had to climb on top of it and pull the plug out so we could shoot. Yeah, because when you're shooting in, like, other locations, there are you they like, oh, there shouldn't be any sounds, but then something will fucking pop up, yeah. And it'll just be, like, horrible. There's the one thing you got to realize whenever you're making a movie is that sound is
crucial.
It's crucial, yeah. And there's going to be external things that are always going to be trying to fuck you. Mm-hmm. So you always got to be on the lookout, and you got to, and even when you're directing, you always got to keep your ear open to be listening, because sometimes you might be so into the scene, you might not notice that something came in or something like that. So you always got to be listening too, very intently while you're directing.
Yeah. I was,
I good sound people outside of like the Hollywood system, like here in New England, where would you look for a good sound person to handle your film?
I don't know. I shoot all my stuff in Florida, so I get people in Florida. Yeah, I don't shoot up here because I just don't know anyone up here. I live up here, but I don't know any filmmaking people. All the people I know are in Florida.
I mean, they're around. They're out there.
You can go to community pages for this, like, the area. There's definitely, you know, a group of people out there doing it.
And like Mandy's still like a big site, right? Yeah. Like that. Yeah. I mean, they're out there.
I'd recommend go to local conventions because you'll have your local filmmakers here. You know, they'll sell you their film for $10 on a DVD, and if you go, boy, I like that sound,
there you go.
Contact them.
Well, also, one of the things I did, this is a good thing you should do. If you're thinking about making a movie, find other filmmakers and volunteer to help them out with their movies. That's what I did when I moved down to Florida. I started volunteering for other people's short films or whatever, and then I would look at all the other crew members and see the ones who are really, really good, and then I would grab them for my movie. So it's good to just, like, get yourself out there and volunteer for other people's stuff, and then you can easily you'll find the people you need.
Yeah. You could barter too. Like, I'll do effects on somebody's project in return for them to come on mine and do something. So, yeah, there's ways.
What are some of the pros and cons of having your film distributed?
A lot of cons. Well, the pros is getting it out there if you have a good distributor. Like, we got on Netflix, and that was huge. Cons, I don't know. There's a lot of tricky things with money. They might see things differently in terms of marketing. They might not push it the right way. There might be differences when it comes to how artwork. Things like that. There's a lot of things. What's that?
Change the name.
The whole
thing, yeah. Yeah, I know someone who made a film and they redesigned the poster.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And
yeah.
It turned into a ripoff of the Trick or Treat poster. Yeah. And if you look on the review on Amazon, everyone's like, they ripped off the Trick or Treat poster. This guy sucks. And so, well, right. No, it wasn't him. It was Netflix or whoever insisted they redo that redesign.
Right, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, I've also had a friend, too, that had his title changed and had a totally different poster as well.
Is there anything to look out for? I mean, obviously, if you're dealing with Netflix, you assume it's going to be, or Amazon, or something you expect to be kind of above board. But is there anything to look out for when signing a contract? Like, you know, did you give up the rights to Terrifier 2? Did
right.
you,
no,
or
no.
did they insist that you do that, or try to get you to do that?
No, actually, just like make sure you retain the rights to obviously your IP. merchandise and all that kind of stuff. Don't give that away.
Do the George Lucas routine where he said, you can have the film, let me have the toys.
Yeah. Try and get an MG. I mean, the money up front. Like
a what?
Like an MG, minimum guarantee of something. Like, make sure they give you money. A lot of times they don't want to pay. And they'll say, oh, we'll pay you when money comes in.
But it's also very hard to get
it is very
any
hard to
distributor
get,
to give you upfront money nowadays. Yeah, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, very hard.
But now, Terrifier is your, is it your third film?
Yeah.
All right, so because you have All Hallows Eve, All Hallows Eve 2.
Yeah.
So
well, I didn't do part 2, but I did.
Oh, you didn't do part 2?
No. I did
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to bring
movie.
That up.
No, it's fine. Actually, I did, they gave me like a producer credit on it just because I was involved with the first one, and I actually created the killer, the pumpkin mask for the...
Okay, so does that give you a little bit more leverage then, that you have a little bit of a track record?
Sure, yeah, I would say so.
So then is it maybe worth... spreading your legs a little bit for that first deal just so that it gives you a little bit more for the second?
Yeah, I mean, every sacrifice I had to make up until this point I think was worth it to get me here. So like, that's cool, you know? You got a trade-off. But like you just said with the Trick or Treat poster, like a low-end distributor, all they want to do is ride the coattails of something that's already popular. So they're just completely – they don't want anything original. They don't care.
Well, like, which is weird because Trick or Treat they didn't even release in the theaters, and then they're ripping it off.
Well, All Hallows Eve was a total ripoff of VHS. Like, that's why they wanted to make that movie, because at the time VHS was out, and that's why there's a fucking VHS in the movie. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, how are you gonna? I'm like, no one even watches VHS tapes anymore. I'm like, this is how are you gonna have a VCR in 2013? Like, but that was like one of the things I had to sacrifice. So I had to write in there. I had to figure out a way to incorporate this VCR and this VHS tape. So that's one of the things you got to deal with.
Matt, now what are some of the pros and cons of self-distributing your films?
Well, you get all the money back. You know, that's the pros of it. You got to pay for it to get pressed up and all that, and then, you know, go and sell it. That's probably the cons of it, but yeah, you get to own, you still own everything. You get all the profit from each DVD and all the merchandise and stuff.
Plus, you have to promote harder too.
You got to promote harder too, but you got to still promote when somebody else is putting it out too. You know.
So you print your own DVDs?
Yeah.
So how much? So if you were to do a run of DVDs or Blu-rays, what does that end up costing you out of pocket? If you don't mind my asking.
Well, it probably breaks down to a couple bucks a DVD. You know what I mean? Depends on how much you're going to get. Your DVD printing of that, then you're going to get the artwork done. You know, whether you're paying an artist to make it, or just paying to get it printed out. You know, packaging and all that. If you want to do something special with it, that's a little extra than what the other guy's doing. You know, you want to add something. It can get pricey. You know. We really just do DVD right now for us. We don't really do Blu-ray personally because it's, you know.
Yeah, Blu-ray is really expensive because when I was toying with the idea of self-distributing Dangerous People, I was looking into the prices for mass replicating Blu-ray, and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, I got to get a distributor because it was like so damn expensive. Like, I would have literally gone poor just printing up Blu-rays of Dangerous People.
Yeah, I mean, only certain people want that Blu-ray, too. I think a lot of people are just happy getting the DVD, you know what I mean?
Well, hell, I still know people are happy getting the VHS.
Now, does anyone have any questions?
How does the Netflix come about? Did you seek them out?
No, that was actually Epic, I guess, already had a relationship with them, and I think they just presented them with like a slew, like maybe like four or five of their titles, and they can only pick like two, and we were one of them. So lucked out, man. And they didn't have any problems with the violence or anything like that. I was very, very surprised. We didn't hear anything. They just took it and threw it on there.
Yeah, Netflix, there's a Gaspar Noé movie on there called Love, which is like quarter of the movie's like hardcore pornography on Netflix. So literally they don't have any standards of what they want on there.
It's amazing.
So yeah, because I know with Amazon Prime, just to be able to sell Dangerous, to rent and sell it digitally on Amazon, we had to blur all the below the waist nudity. Like, it had to be blurred or else they wouldn't have accepted
it. That's the whole point of the film.
I know. But yeah, it's like Amazon is Netflix seems very much easier to get what you need on there. But the problem is it's harder to get on there. Like, I remember our first movie, Actress Apocalypse, was on Netflix for about 5 years. But in this the way it is now, it would never be on there. And Dangerous People will never be on Netflix. You have to have a really, really, really good distributor now to get on there. It's the gatekeeping is much stronger than it was. Because the one thing you got to understand with all these streaming companies, when they first start out, they need content. They're thirsty for content, so they'll take anybody's movie. But once they start making their own content, and once they start working out deals with the big, Paramounts and the Disneys and all that, they don't need your stuff anymore. And they'll just be like, yo, we needed you at first, but now screw. We got Orange is the New Black. We got the Marvel movies. We got this. We don't need your little movie anymore. So, and that's what happened with Amazon. Amazon was wanting everybody at first. They're like, come on, Amazon Prime, put your movie on there and you'll get paid when people watch. And then, they started making their own content and they started making deals with everybody else. And now they start kicking movies off en masse of indie filmmakers. So basically now, I remember this all happened right before Dangerous People came out, and because of there's a lot of nudity in Dangerous People, and they would not accept it on Prime, and we had to fog the below the waist just to get it on there for rental. So yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult now, unless some other big streaming service comes on that we can latch onto and reap the benefits for a couple of years before they kick you off again.
I don't want to open anybody up here to a lawsuit, so. But I imagine, whatever your personal experience, you probably have talked with other indie filmmakers. Are there any particular distribution companies or is it that have a good reputation amongst the filmmakers? Like, I don't want to open it up to the ones to avoid, because again, we don't want slander lawsuits. Like any ones that give people good deals, fair deals. They just go, oh yes, they offer me a deal, go with them.
Everybody I've spoken to, no one's like, oh, they're amazing. Go with these guys. No, it's always like, they're all right. it's bad. It's really bad out there. It's not good for the filmmaker.
The guy who made I'm Dreaming of a White Doomsday. I don't know if anyone's seen that.
Right.
He deals with Scream Team releasing, and okay. he's had nothing but praise for them.
Wow.
Hey, because I know my distributor, SGL, I've gotten checks from them, which is rare. From your distributor, because most of the time they just screw you over. The problem with SGL is that SGL doesn't do much advertising. So when you go with them, you got to know that you got to do your own advertising. And it's hard to cut through the clutter. And Facebook. Oh my God. Can I complain about Facebook for a second here? When I started using Facebook advertising, they would accept anything I would put on there. Someone with a gun, whatever, like that. And then literally now, someone has a gun. Sorry, we cannot accept this advertising. Yet any Hollywood movie that has a gun, they're accepting advertisement for. Then, because my actress is a Playboy model, and yes, she has cleavage in the movie, if we put anything with cleavage, they're like, oh, it's too sexually suggestive. Then I see an advertisement for that, some show that was on Stars called Now Apocalypse, where people are just naked covering themselves up. And that's okay because it's a big corporation. They screw the indie filmmakers, Facebook. So now I can't even get a friggin' ad on Facebook to go through to promote my movie because everything is too racy for them. Whereas any major studio can get away with it. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. And it's hard. It's really hard as an indie filmmaker right now.
Don't do it. It's a warning, guys. Run away.
Where do you put your marketing dollars?
We didn't spend any money on marketing, thankfully. It was all word of mouth, honestly, for Terrifier, at least. Anyway.
I gave up on marketing. I tried to get stuff through. It'd always get rejected, and I'd have to put out the blandest goddamn ad that would get no one to look at the movie. And what am I going to do, spend a lot of money and get no response from it? Or, it's just like, whatever. Hopefully word of mouth will somehow work out. So what you got to do is you got to contact podcasts. You got to contact websites to review movies and stuff like that and try to get them to cover the movie and watch it or whatever. And hopefully more people see it and word of mouth spreads. People talk about it on the internet. And that's the best advertising you can get, is trying to get people to talk about your movie. Because trying to advertise and spending money, it's not going to work as good as just regular people talking about your movie. So the best thing is to get as many influencers in the horror community to watch it and review it or talk about it.
a lot of times on the podcast, it's we go over how did you first find out about the movie, and obviously if it's something like Godzilla, well, because I'm breathing, that's how I found out about the movie.
Right.
But a lot of times it's well, I started hearing about it from this podcast, or they're talking about it at this podcast, or somebody was talking about it at this horror group on Facebook, and you're right, it just starts bubbling up, and then eventually you hit some critical mass, and then next thing you know, you got people in the diner going, "Art the Clown,"
right, right.
You know.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, like with Terrifier, I can tell you, like, I have not seen this happen for an indie movie for a long time, to where it's like you start hearing about it, you know, from like everyone. Like, I've heard about the movie from so many different people, and with a lot of indie movies, that does not happen. It's a rarity. So what was happened with Terrifier is definitely you got really goddamn lucky that you people like your movie and are talking about it, because it's very rare that I see like a kind of like a lot of people talking about the same movie, and that's what kind of happened. And then I remember I saw that it popped up on Netflix, and I'm like, because it that's a rarity. It's a rarity for an indie horror movie now to get on Netflix, and for him to do it, it's definitely a something that should be applauded, because if he can get in there, maybe it can lead to some other people, and maybe it'll you know.
But it also helps have something marketable, which, despite what people were saying, Killer Clown, okay. Right. You know, and you know, you can get almost anybody with the Killer Clown. And I could describe Terrifier to my high school students. I'd say, Killer Clown movie. I might get in trouble when they watch the movie. But no one would say, oh, he recommended them a Killer Clown movie. If I recommended them Dangerous People, I'd say, what's it about?
You'd go to jail.
Yeah. There isn't – when you pick the kind of movie you're making – and obviously you must listen to your muse, however perverted your muse might be. Just recognize that a story about a couple of guys who are, you know, doing what they do to the young woman.
Well, here's the thing. In my movie, in the first 20 minutes, someone gets their dick bit off, and that's not the worst thing that happens in the movie.
Yeah, so imagine that in the TV Guide description. That's going to be that's going to be a hard sell. And when you know, is that that's not going to be for grandma, or maybe you have a very cool grandma, but it's not going to be for my grandma. So it's all going to be, you know, you've got to pick and choose. And so if you have, it's easier to market if you have a marketable idea. And if you don't have a marketable idea, just say this is a very niche audience.
I'm the king of unmarketable ideas right here.
But then what you do is you look for it, you say you market it as that, as a niche film, right? And you just play, it's not for everybody. And you can start playing with, I've seen movies that's, you know, like, I walked out of the theater, right? And I'd had me vomiting. This was a horrible thing. And they'll lean
Embrace the fact
that it offends people, or that it's too strange and surreal, or whatever it may be.
I think Mother was the first sort of mainstream movie that actually started embracing the negative reviews and putting them in their ads. I thought that was kind of cool. But I mean, you see it for smaller movies, like you just said. Like, I think Human Centipede 2, I think, was doing that and stuff like that. But
what is the most important advice to anyone looking to get into filmmaking?
Just never, ever give up on it. And I say this all the time. I say, if you know deep inside if you're a filmmaker or not, if it's meant to be, if that's, because that's all you think about 24 hours a day is making movies, watching movies, and you have to, and this like freaks people out when I say this, but, and everybody always told me, because this is it's really cool what happened with Terrifier, but like, it's been a long friggin' journey to get here. Like, I've been walking around with a camcorder around my neck since I'm 12 years old, you know, and I made the first short film with Art the Clown in 2006. And I just never stopped. It was like a really crazy uphill battle. But you just have to keep doing it. And I say, don't have a safety net. Like, I never had a backup plan. You know, it's like, yeah, you got to work. You got to do whatever you got to do to make money. But the minute you just say, like, all right, if this doesn't work, I'm going to have a career and I'm going to do this. You know it's back there, and you're not going to try hard enough. You have to like be terrified into just knowing, if I don't do this, it's like everything's going to fall apart. So that's it. And you'll make it happen if you really believe in yourself, and you just have to keep pushing and just don't put a clock on it. So.
Well, filmmaking is a mental illness. So if you're truly going to do it, you're not going to stop because your brain is fucked up and you're just going to keep doing it. And if you fail, you're going to be like, I'm done. Then 2 weeks later, you're going to be like, well, when am I making my next movie? Exactly. So it's just going to – it's definitely – we should all be put into a mental institution because literally it's the craziest – thing to be able to do. So if you're gonna, you have to be really mentally ill to do it. And if you are, then you'll probably do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Just do it. If you want to do it, just get out there and do it. Nothing's holding you back. You can grab a group of friends, camera, use your phone, shoot something, cut it up, see how it looks. You know, if you like doing it, do it again. If you didn't, you know, you tried it. You know, you don't have to be filmmakers. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a horror fan. You know what I mean? Yeah, just do it. Try it out. Maybe it's your thing. Maybe it's not. But, you know, maybe you'll even have fun making that one, you know. But, yeah, just try it out. And if it's you, do it. If not, you know, do something else.
That's awesome. So, obviously, you guys are supporters of indie horror.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, is there... got a receptive audience here. Is there an indie horror film other than your own that you would recommend people seek out? Obviously not something that has blown big, you know, your paranormal
sure,
activities.
Sure.
Is there an indie horror film that they could go seek out maybe now in the somewhere in the dealer's room or that you might recommend to them?
Honestly, like the last indie movie that I really loved, especially because of the budget, was Found, that you said. Okay. I couldn't, because it was made for like $15,000. And it's really – there's a lot of amateur aspects to it, but it really – it's a very effective movie. So if you guys haven't seen that, I would check that out. Yeah.
For me, I'd say the guy I made, Dangerous People and Actress Apocalypse, he was involved with a movie called Franklin, A Symphony of Pain. And it's a really weird kind of crazy movie. Deals with like MK Ultra and stuff like that. And it's definitely, not a fun, like, hey, it's a fun movie. It's like a very kind of movie you got to make, take your own interpretation of and stuff like that. And that's really one to kind of hunt down and find. And I mean, you'll really have to hunt down and find it.
When did that one come out?
It came out, they shot it after Dangerous People, but it came out before Dangerous People. Like, I had nothing to do with it.
No, just saying, because I know there was a movie that came out. Well, Franklin came out like 10 years ago. So it's not going to be the same one.
Yeah, this is a different movie. Yeah, but that one's worth checking out because it's just so different and just weird. And I think, you know, if you're into those type of movies, you might like it. I think it got kicked off of Amazon for renting and selling, so you can't get it there anymore. I don't think it's on there. You can check, but I know there's been a DVD released. But yeah, so try finding that.
I just watched, I think, 68 Kill. Trent Hagar movie, which was really cool. It was like really well put together. They didn't have a lot of money. I watched The Ranger recently too, that just came out, and that was done really well.
That was a very good film.
And the lead actor has a booth upstairs.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, you watch that, and you can tell. I mean, they really made use of their locations and stuff. You know,
and available on Shudder.
Yep.
Highly recommend that subscription.
Cool.
Anthony, anyone?
I've definitely got something to recommend. I recommend you go to ScreamTeamReleasing.com. Definitely check out films like The Bond, Bong of the Living Dead, Close Calls, and coming soon, Exposure, which last year premiered here at ScareCon New England.
I mentioned I'm Dreaming of a White Doomsday, which is on the festival circuit, but you can get their stuff through Scream Team Releasing. We did not plan this. We're not paid by them, but we should probably contact them. I happen to know the filmmaker, but it's only because I met him after he was making movies. He's not a friend of mine that I'm just promoting his stuff. It's a really good, disturbing apocalypse family horror film. It's a weird family drama in the apocalypse. It's hard to describe it, but I recommend it.
Cool.
And it has Santa. Not a guy dressed as Santa. It has Santa Claus.
And Scream Team Releasing also loads their Blu-rays up with features, yep, commentaries, and other fun stuff too. You can get autographed DVDs and Blu-rays. It's ScreamTeamReleasing.com.
Perfect.
All right, I think we have to start wrapping up because there's a new group coming in here. Something near, not nearly as fascinating or sexy as we are, but since we are all here, we have our independent filmmakers here. Why don't you again remind everybody what it is that you made, and if you, they can find it, where they can find it, and what do you have coming up next? Why don't we start over here, work our way down?
I made a dark comedy called DJ Stan the Man and a psychological thriller called Insomniac, and we have a booth upstairs at Boombastic Films, so if you want to stop by and talk about what's coming next.
I made Dangerous People and worked on and co-wrote and acted in a movie called Actress Apocalypse, and I got a booth upstairs, and they're both for purchase up there. And what I'm working on right now is I'm working on the script. I'm rewriting it. It's about the making of the Tim Ritter movie Killing Spree. So that's hopefully the next thing I'll be doing.
And I made Terrifier. I'm upstairs with David Howard Thornton, who plays Art the Clown. We have a photo op, in-costume photo op at 7 p.m. tonight. So if you want to meet Art the Clown and take some freaky pictures, you could do that. And I'm working on Terrifier, too. We're going to start shooting in October.
Cool.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Selling anything, are we?
No, I'm
not. Selling anything, we're just giving you our love. So please keep sure to support the convention, and hopefully we'll see you again next year.
Besides Anthony T's horror show, you can also listen to these other fine podcasts on the Doc Discussions Network. Doc Discussions, hosted by Philip Perrone and Michael Darwin. You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, a Game of Thrones podcast. Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast, Halloween Boutique, Psychotronic Reviews, and Searching for American Gods. You can find Doc Discussions on the web at www.docdiscussions.com, and Doc Discussions is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, in Spotify.
Hey guys, this is Steven Christina. I'm the founder, owner, creator, and host of Super Retro Throwback Reviews. Are you looking for the best movie reviews, music reviews, video game reviews, and Comic-Con coverage all around? Well then, look no further. Definitely check out Super Retro Throwback Reviews on YouTube and our new audio podcast, the new and improved Super Retro Throwback Reviews Audio Files version 2.0 on the following media distributors: Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify.
Class is over, John. Now for something new and improved.
Want to find out the latest guest announcements and news regarding Anthony T's Horror Show? You can follow Anthony T's Horror Show on these social media platforms: Facebook at www.facebook.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show, on Twitter at www.twitter.com/AnthonyT's Horror, and Instagram at www.instagram.com/AnthonyT's Horror Show. I want to thank my friends at The Dorkening for providing the audio for this panel. Without their expertise, this panel would not be able to be aired here on Anthony T's Horror Show, so I want to say special thanks to them for all their hard work over at ScareCon New England. And I also want to thank my co-moderator, Michael Darwin, for participating in the panel. As I have to admit, this was a very good panel. I had a very fun time doing it. And now, here's my film recommendation for this episode. For my film recommendation this episode, I kind of want to stick with the indie film panel theme and recommend an independent film. And I also wanted to recommend a film from one of the panelists that took part in the indie filmmaking panel that you just heard. So I decided to go back to my library, and when I noticed at ScareCon New England, I was at Matthew Fisher's Boombastic Films table. He had a film called The Haunting of Alice Dee, which I haven't seen in a couple years since I reviewed it back when I was reviewing on a film site called FilmArcade.net. Since Matthew Fisher is the second assistant director on that film, I'm going to go ahead and recommend The Haunting of Alice Dee here on this episode. Now, this is a very good film. I saw this a couple years ago. I remember, like I said before, I reviewed the film. And after seeing this film again, this film does still hold up today. One of the reasons why the film still holds up today, in my opinion, is the fact that this film has a very creepy tone. Writer, director, star Jessica Sonneborn does a very good job making sure this film has a creepy vibe throughout, whether it's the way she handles her direction in the film, to how she came up with the film story. Everything had a very eerie vibe to it, which really made this a very good film, in my opinion. I also like the fact that she does a good job making sure that the characters are interesting enough, and the backstory kept my interest. It made this film very scary at times. It also helped that the film has some good lead performances here, as I thought the leads really did a good job making this film work. The film also has a good supporting performance by Kane Hodder here. As an owner of an 1890 brothel, he really does a good job making sure his character is dislikable here. Because definitely this is one of those characters where Kane Hodder is very dislikable, and he really does a good job making sure that his character is that way. The film also features a performance from former pro wrestler Al Snow as well. I would definitely recommend you check out The Haunting of Alice Dee on DVD or on various VOD platforms. This is a very entertaining indie supernatural horror film, which deserves your support. And with that, that's my film recommendation for this episode. If you like the show, don't forget, you can also visit Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube, as I have a new video up on the YouTube channel. It took a while for me to get a video up on the channel, as I've been busy with a lot of things, but I finally had the time to make a video, and it's about almost 30 minutes long, as yours truly recently did a supersized episode of Anthony T's Horror Collection over on Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube. It highlights all the things I picked up at ScareCon New England. It's a very long episode, but I had fun making this episode. And also, on Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube, I'm going to be debuting a new segment very, very soon called Viva La Trauma. I've already filmed the first episode, so definitely check that out between episodes, as it will become a regular feature on Anthony T's Horror Show on YouTube. You can subscribe to my YouTube channel over at youtube.com/AnthonyThurber. It's T-H-U-R-B-E-R. With that, it wraps up this episode of Anthony T's Horror Show. I want to thank you for listening. Have a good day and support indie horror.